a part of the family the way it ought to be. I preferred home health care. You're in preferred company.
WOBM AM 1160 and 1310 proudly bring you Preferred Company, giving you information on the world of home health care. Here are your hosts, Joe Markell and Marianne Levy.
Yes, back. It's 10:05. Preferred Company.
Indeed it is, Marianne, and you're listening to Preferred Company with Joe Markell and Marianne Levy on 1160 and 1310 WOBM AM. You can call our studios at 848-221-8092. And for information on all of our home health care services at Preferred Home Health Care, call 1-800-603-CARE or visit our website at preferredcares.com. You could also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I can't say
what. Do you tweet?
Only with you.
Oh, do tweet.
No, I tweet with you and I tweet with everybody.
No, I don't tweet.
I don't tweet either.
I'm not a tweeter.
No, but I will be.
You really?
Yeah, because
Preferred, I don't even know how to tweet.
Preferred is, you don't have to do anything. You could just follow people.
Well, almost like stalking?
No, you'll get like I get news from 89,000 here from Town Square
right.
Media. Is that what we
yeah,
are?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Like, you'll just get...
Updates?
Messages.
So, in other words, constantly all day, you'll be getting messages.
Well, I hope not. People who are polite tweeters don't do it all day.
Like celebrities tweet, right?
Yes.
Is
so
that
perhaps
what they do?
It's once a week or once a month.
And can you tweet them back? Or no?
I would think so, but it's not as if it's going to their... cell phone. You know what? We have a youngster with us. Could you tweet them back, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can tweet them back.
Even if they're like a celebrity?
Oh, yeah. Emil Hirsch liked one of my...
Yeah? Like Madonna could be tweeting and she'd make a statement and I tweet her back, but not necessarily she's answering. It's just probably got people that tweet for her. Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's not them personally tweeting.
Well,
they hire people to tweet.
I instant messaged. Did you ever see Chris Raggi on the news on CBS?
I have no idea who that is.
He's a newscast. He comes on at noon.
Okay.
And I was watching a show and I saw that he was, we're Facebook friends.
Okay.
So I just instant messaged him that I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, and did he get back to you?
I said, thank you, Joel. Yes.
Oh, he used your name.
He used my name.
Very nice.
It was very nice. It was
very
a great
nice.
Deal. You know, Marianne, speaking of names, I can't think of a more famous name than the person that's going to be joining us during the second segment, Eileen Rockefeller. Could you imagine walking around with the last name of Rockefeller?
But there's probably a lot of people with the name Rockefeller who aren't related to the Rockefellers, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good question, but I would think that you're right. But to have the name Rockefeller is just amazing. I mean, it's just synonymous with wealth.
Her last name is Growald? Is that
her
married name?
Her married name, yes. She's married to Paul Growald.
Oh, she's not that old.
Well, she's the great-granddaughter of John Rockefeller. How old is she? I don't really know.
She was born in 52.
Oh, so she's
60...
a baby boomer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A baby boomer. Wow.
She's fourth generation Rockefeller family, widely known as the cousins. So I just looked her up here.
And we're going to talk about the book that she's writing.
Well, it has a lot to do with what your
business. What am I saying writing?
She wrote.
I'm in the middle of it, and I'm going to tell her how much I'm enjoying it. Yes.
It's about health care. Basically, right?
Well, the part that I'm up to is all about Rockefeller.
Oh, then maybe you're reading something else, because it says here she founded and was president of the Institute for Advancement of Health, dealing principally with the scientific understanding of mind-body interactions in health and disease.
Well, the book is pointing to... You know what? We're going to save this for Eileen when she's on the air with us.
Okay.
All right? Because I don't want to give anything away, and I want her to say it in her own words. But
okay.
Wow, Marianne, and having a Rockefeller with us today, kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Who do you think is the most important person you've ever spoken? You know what I mean by important. I don't mean importance in your life. The biggest celebrity.
The biggest celebrity.
Celebrity.
I was just thinking about that the other day. The biggest celebrity that I've ever spoken to on the telephone or met in person?
Well, let's say in person. Yeah, one-on-one. Like a name that everybody would know.
Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers? And
yes.
You met her on a plane.
I met her on a plane.
And she was nice?
Yes. Jackie Mason.
Was he nice?
Very.
We had him on the air with us. We
very nice.
Him.
I saw him at a... I bumped into him at... It was hard to get out. I met him in the lobby of a hotel.
Okay.
And...
Did you introduce yourself?
I actually told him how much I enjoy his work, and he was willing to spend a little bit of time. He wasn't like, thank you very much, goodbye.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously you did because you saw him and you approached him.
Snoop Dogg?
You met Snoop Dogg.
I sat next to him on a plane.
Oh, you said he wasn't...
It was a bad experience.
Yeah.
Yes. Not so much him. I will tell you, he was like possibly, let's just put it, flying high in the sky.
Oh, okay.
That was my impression,
really?
Right? Like higher than 30,000 feet.
Did he talk to you, or was it just what he was doing, like actions, or?
I don't know. I'm telling you, it could have just been somebody who was very tired, or he has a reputation for.
But was he obnoxious?
Being
was he rude?
On
was
a 747 when he's on the ground.
Okay, but what I'm saying, what was?
It was his entourage. He had about 12 people.
All in first class with him?
Yes. And they were horrible.
Really?
Tossing food in the language that was
and
coming.
And they let them?
It was really, I will tell you, it was like being with we landed in Krakow, Poland.
Okay.
There was a Coca-Cola festival of all, not many famous music personalities.
Okay.
I don't remember who else was there, but we found out that that's why Snoop Dogg was on the plane with us.
Okay.
And it's so good that I could tell this on the air, actually, because it was such a horrible experience. And when we got off the plane, the airport in Krakow is like the Atlantic City airport. It's
small.
It's tiny.
Okay.
And you go to your luggage carousel, and a woman came over to him and said, the mayor of Poland would like to meet you once you are on the other side of customs.
Right.
And I thought that was like, wow.
Right.
Like the mayor of Poland. First of all, you don't have a mayor of Poland. You have a mayor of Krakow, I would think.
Right.
So I'm not sure what she was referring to. But if the mayor of Poland had ever seen what his entourage, the people that he travels with, were like on a plane, I mean, I think an American airline would have just probably turned around and landed.
Oh, so it wasn't an American airline. It wasn't United or...
No, it was... I'm almost positive it was Austrian Airlines.
Really?
Yes.
That's just being obnoxious.
Or the
that's
Polish Airlines. I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, really...
What were you doing going over there?
I took my family to Berlin.
Okay.
Poland. Tel Aviv.
All right.
And back to New York.
Oh, okay. All
yes,
right.
New Jersey.
Okay.
So wait a minute. Snoop Dogg, you asked me, because I was thinking the same exact question the other day. Who else have I ever, met? And I don't know. I know that there's somebody more famous than Jackie Mason and Joan Rivers, and they're just not coming to my
just
mind.
Just not thinking about it.
Right. It'll come to my mind.
I haven't met many. I'm not out anywhere to really.
Lorraine Bracco.
Oh, love her.
Yes, I spoke with her.
She's very,
I was in
she
a
seems
restaurant
like a,
with her.
A pip.
I actually walked over to her during dinner. It was at a Yankee game.
Uh-huh.
And I got into, like, the exclusive part of, like, where you can have dinner.
Right.
And she was at a table next to me, and it was while The Sopranos was hot.
Right.
And I walked over to her, and I just, like, excused myself.
Right.
For interrupting our meal. She was very, very gracious.
She seems like a very nice person. You ever watch the show Nurse? Nurse Jackie?
Actually, I don't.
Oh, my. I was really
Wait
into
a minute.
It.
Are we talking about Carmelo or Lorraine? I mean, I'm talking about Edie Falco. I'm talking about
Edie Falco.
Dr. Melfi.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm talking Edie Falco.
No, sorry.
No.
You got the right show.
I know I got the right show. Okay, yeah. Never mind. And who did you went? Lorraine Bracco.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It was Sweetheart.
She played the shrink. The shrink.
Yes.
The shrink. Okay.
She played that part
You know,
well,
I've
too.
Never watched one Soprano.
You're kidding.
Nope. Never watched one episode of The Sopranos.
I really enjoyed that show. I will say I missed that series. I see that it ended. I think whoever ended it did it at a good time, just when people want more.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, now they're not going to get more.
Well.
You know.
No. There were shows that did go on like that.
I don't think you couldn't do it without him. You couldn't do it without Tony Soprano. You
know,
it just would not be The Sopranos.
I met Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth?
Yes.
How tiny is she? Let me ask you a question.
I met her twice.
Is she shorter than Stephanie?
I don't know.
Oh, really?
She's little, but I didn't really, you know, when you're looking at somebody like that.
Oh, you weren't standing next to her? Well, I would think you would have noticed.
It was really in the height of Dr. Ruth time.
Well, she's height, no pun intended. She's extremely short.
I know, but she was extremely big in those days.
What do you mean, heavy?
She had a radio show.
No. Oh, big, yeah.
Big,
oh,
in
yeah.
that way, yes.
Yeah.
Extremely
yeah.
kind. That's what I'm saying. These names will come to me. First of all, I used to work in television scenery.
Yeah.
So.
You've come in contact with people.
Like, have I ever been friendly with these people? No. I've had, like, a few minutes with each of them.
Yeah.
Out of everybody, Dr. Ruth was one of the friendliest.
Who was the unfriendliest? Not talking obnoxious. I'm talking unfriendly.
I can't say that anybody would.
Like, did anyone dish
yes.
you?
Yes. Jason Alexander.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Bob loves him.
Well, I used to, and now I don't.
Obnoxious?
You know what? He could be right. Okay, I had tickets to, do you remember the show Big?
Yeah.
Do you remember the movie
yeah.
Big?
Yeah, with Tom Hanks. Okay.
Well...
Let's hold that because we do have Eileen on.
Do we?
Yes, Eileen's on. So we'll take a little bitty break and come back with Eileen Rockefeller. And then after that, we'll pick up your story because we don't want to keep her on
hold.
I
know, but certainly it's more exciting to speak with Eileen. So
absolutely.
All right. You're listening to Preferred Company with Joel, Mark, Helen, Mary Ann Levy on WOBM AM 1160 and 1310. And Mary Ann and I will be back after these messages with Eileen Rockefeller.
You're listening to Preferred Company, giving you information on the world of home health care. Here's Joel Markell and Mary Ann Levy on WOBMAM 1160 and 1310.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, you are listening to Preferred Company with Joel Markell and Mary Ann Levy right here on 1160 and 1310 WOBM AM. And you are in Preferred Company. And our very, very preferred guest today is Eileen Rockefeller, and I want to welcome Eileen with a very warm, preferred welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, Joel and Marianne. It's really an honor to be with you. I'm very interested in what you're doing with home health care.
Ah, we can get into that first, but you being the guest, I have to, I feel obligated to ask you about yourself, and I am fascinated with having you on the show today because I am in the middle of reading your book, which we're going to get into as well.
Great.
Eileen, I have to tell you that it seems to me that besides being a Rockefeller, there was a whole other dimension in your life. Now, keep in mind, I am not done with the book yet, so I don't know if there are going to be any wild turns. But
right.
Your mother was an incredible woman.
That's true. That's absolutely true. She had many dimensions to her, and she wasn't always easy. But as most fascinating people are, she was complicated, had a great sense of humor, of passion for nature and animals. And given all the challenges of being married to my father and married into the family, the Rockefeller family, I think she did an incredible job, and I've tried to show that in my book, Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself.
Now, Eileen, pardon me, you also describe how your mother was a very big, I'm going to say prankster or clown.
Yes. Yes, she loved playing pranks on people. And even as a child, she didn't like the school she went to. Well, she didn't like school, period. So one winter, she brought a piece of Limburger cheese with her, which, as you know, is very smelly, and she put it behind the radiator in the school, and nobody knew she had done it. No one knew where this horrific stench was coming from, and they had to close the school down for 3 days, and she never got caught. So that was a really great prank.
And I also remember her in the book. You talk about how she did some pranks with guests who would come into the home expecting for the Rockefellers to be rather starchy.
Oh, yes, I loved that prank. Well, that was one that she and a dear friend of hers put on together, where they dressed up as maids for a dinner party that my grandfather, John D. Rockefeller Jr., was giving.
I love this
and
part of the book. I have
wasn't
to interrupt
that
you.
So great.
Yes.
I'm so glad you've asked me about it. That was so much fun. And his expression of horror when this supposed maid served him a bowl of soup and all of a sudden appeared like she had the shakes, and her whole head shook so much that the pince-nez, or those little eyeglasses of the former century without earpieces, shook right off into the soup in front of him, and he was horrified. And so then she removes that bowl of soup, don't you remember? And
yes,
she goes behind, and of course he thinks that she's taking away some of his best china for the guests. And then he hears this loud crash behind the screen, and it was only a fake dish that she'd bought at the 10-cent store. At which point she and the other come out and let him know. Yeah.
I'm going to turn a little Freudian here. And I have no idea if I'm hitting upon something or your mother was born that way. Do you think that part of this personality, part of that piece of her personality, was actually a way of managing having married into the Rockefeller family?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, humor is a great leveler, and it's also a way through stress. And thank goodness she had a good sense of humor. She had such a wonderful laugh. I can still hear it today. And she had an amazing skill of putting people at ease when they were in her company. And that was, I admired her immensely for that, because I knew her very well, and I knew that she was a fundamentally shy and insecure person. So for her to be able to turn that around and make, you know, a head of state or secretary of state, whoever, you name it, be at ease, and people from foreign countries from all over the world, it was quite an accomplishment.
I want to remind the audience that they are listening to Preferred Company with Joel Markell, Mary Ann Levy, and our very, very preferred guest today is Eileen Rockefeller. Eileen, I want to get into the family tree a little bit, so our listeners can understand exactly what branch you fell from. And
absolutely. And I just want to remind the listeners that the book I wrote is called Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, which they can buy online or go to my website, EileenRockefeller.com. I am the descendant of John D. Rockefeller Sr., the oil magnate of the early part of the 20th century. And so I'm the one of the youngest members of the fourth generation, and my parents were David and Peggy Rockefeller. My father is still living and going to turn 99 on June 12th.
God bless.
Yeah.
Now, Eileen, one thing that is clear from the beginning, and I think you introduce it very early for a reason, my guess is because it's still traveling you, with you in life, that being the obligation, I would say, that your parents instilled upon their children in being charitable.
Yes, that was an expectation that was more implicit than explicit. I mean, my parents didn't sit around the dining room table and say, now you need to go do something of service. But my grandfather already had his credo carved in stone at Rockefeller Center, which anybody could see right there below Prometheus, or not below, across the skating rink from him. And one of the excerpts that has been indelibly etched in my memory is, every right a responsibility, every opportunity implies an obligation, every possession a duty. So that's a pretty heavy mantle for a young child to assume. But on the other hand, I ultimately appreciate the fact that there were expectations. It's far better than the alternative of not having anything expected of one, which I'm afraid a lot of people don't express either implicitly or explicitly their expectations of children. And part of expectations is a way of showing your trust in them and your faith in them. And that's a very important aspect of a person's maturation.
Eileen, you probably can't be aware of this, but we are broadcasted live right now in Toms River, New Jersey, which is about perhaps 10 miles from Lakewood, where the Rockefeller Mansion sat. I don't know if your family ever talked about your great-grandfather's summer retreat in Lakewood, New Jersey, perhaps one of the summer retreats, but he did end up donating it to the county, if I have my facts correct.
Yes. Well, it's not a place I've visited, and now you're going to get me very curious. I'm going to have to come and see it.
Oh, and be with us in the studio, hopefully.
Well, that would be lovely. I actually wasn't aware of that particular house. I have, now, when you say Lakewood, New Jersey, though, that does ring a bell. It's just I've never visited that home, and I'm so glad it was donated for a good cause.
Well, that goes without saying to any resident of Ocean County, certainly of Lakewood. So many people have been able to enjoy the grounds of the park that he donated to this county. And I will tell you that when people speak of Lakewood or of Ocean County, your great-grandfather's name comes up, with people always asking each other whether they know that this is where the Rockefeller family used to summer. So,
wow.
We would love to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Eileen, anyone who's had a family name as famous as yours has both seen it as a blessing and a curse. I think we can all understand the fantasy of Rockefeller being synonymous with wealth, your great-grandfather being the first billionaire in the United States.
In the world, actually, or he was the richest man in the world at that time.
The richest man in the world. Okay, so being born into that kind of money is a fantasy that we all have. But I would love if you can share the problems that come with having been born with the last name Rockefeller.
Yes, well, with great wealth comes great responsibility. And that was made very clear, as I quoted from the credo of my grandfather that's in stone at Rockefeller Center. And I think as children, I probably felt more the pressures and the obligation, because I didn't know who I was yet. as I became more conscious of myself, who was I and what were my unique skills that I could offer this world, then it really, it became more of a joy than an obligation to have natural access to people. So, for example, when I founded the Institute for the Advancement of Health in 1983, you probably haven't gotten to that part in the book yet.
I have not.
No. Well, my mentor was Norman Cousins, who had just written, in 1979, he published Anatomy of an Illness as Perceived by the Patient. And it, you may remember that book.
I do.
Was a very popular bestseller. And that was a, he published that 2 years before I started working on creating an institute that would further the scientific understanding of mind-body interactions in health and disease. Norman was my first entree into the field, but I soon realized that he was ridiculed by the medical establishment because at that time there was no field of mind-body health. I'm happy to say today there is, and the institute I founded was part of the reason for that. I brought together the key players, the founders of the subfields, such as psychoneuroimmunology, psychopharmacology, biofeedback, and people who were doing visualization, meditation. So I brought together names where that were well, highly regarded, or like the top of their game in their subfield. They had never come together as a community, so I think that's what helped make all the difference.
Eileen, I'm being told that we have to take a short break. Are you able to join us for the next segment? Because I have so much more to ask
sure.
you.
Sure.
Great. Okay. You're listening to Preferred Company with Joel Markell and Marianne Levy, 1160 WOBM AM. And we will be back after these messages with our very preferred guest, Eileen Rockefeller.
You're listening to Preferred Company, giving you information on the world of home health care. Here's Joel Markell and Marianne Levy on WOBM AM 1160 and 1310.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, you are listening to Preferred Company with Joel Markell and Marianne Levy. And I am going to skip the usual intro after a break because I do want to get to speak further with Eileen Rockefeller, a very preferred guest today. So, Eileen, for those who may have just tuned in, let me welcome you warmly to Preferred Company today.
Well, thank you very much, Joel and Marianne. It's really wonderful to be having this conversation. I've been enjoying it with you and hope people will tune in to my website, EileenRockefeller.com, or order my book, Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, which I've been told is a really great present for mothers since Mother's Day is coming up. Actually, a number of people, I'm happy to say, have told me that the stories, some of them, opened the conversations in their families with their mothers and siblings.
Well, I will tell you for that, for the parts that I have read so far, I will tell you that it's fascinating to be reading about your life, let alone having you with us today. Eileen, I want to fast forward a little bit. I know that you founded an organization called, is it pronounced Cassell or Castle?
Castle, which is stands for Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning.
And exactly what does the Castle organization do?
Castle was founded in 1994 by, I was one of the co-founders with Daniel Goleman, the author of Emotional Intelligence, and about six other people, to promote social and emotional learning in classrooms across America from pre-K through 12th grade. We now have programs in every state in the country and 17 countries around the world. And what these, it's taught in a variety of ways, but wherever social and emotional learning is taught, which means teaching children even as early as 2 years old what it means, what the language of feelings, and as they get older, to teach them self-regulation skills, listening skills, self-awareness. These are the kinds of life skills that ultimately make someone successful or not in life. And what we've found is that after 20 years of research, anywhere there are social and emotional skills being taught, academics are 11% higher. The scores are.
Eileen, you are one of many people born into wealth who did not sit back, meaning the little bit that I know about you, I see that you are investing perhaps most of your energy in making sure that we protect this earth. And I would love for you to talk about that as well.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Joel. When our sons went off to college about in 2007, when the last of our two sons went off, my husband and I looked at each other and said, what next? What's our next partnership? And we decided to devote a good portion of our time to protecting the earth as we know it and to helping to stop further damage in terms of climate change. So we looked through all kinds of options to figure out what would be the most strategic use of what is really very limited funds in as a fourth generation member of my family. And so we ended up choosing to stop the further build out of coal-fired power plants simply because coal accounts for 40% of all CO2 that goes into the Earth's atmosphere. And we have been very successful with this. We gave the first catalytic grant to Sierra Club in 2007. Our philanthropic advisor has worked tirelessly since then, and there now are $90 million going towards stopping coal in this country, which may surprise a lot of people. It's been a very much used form of energy, but in fact, it's no longer even making sense financially. We funded a study of that, which proved that. So the stopping of new coal-fired power plants is allowing the space for alternative, sustainable forms of energy.
Now, Eileen, you mentioned in the book, or it may just be on the jacket, I don't recall, because, again, I'm not at the end of it. You currently reside in Vermont.
I do. We live on an organic farm, and we raise our own vegetables, which we eat year-round organically.
Now, I'm going to do a little bit of psychoanalysis here myself. I am going to say that too, literally grew out of the Rockefeller family, that this was the way you were brought up, and it's not a coincidence that you received the attention that you did as a child to become an organic farmer as an adult.
Well, that's true. My mother was a passionate gardener, and she always gave me a little plot. I'm the youngest of six children. And so I ended up having probably quite a bit of time with her after the others went away to school. And I used to garden right alongside of her. And then when I was 12, I went away to a wonderful boarding school that was from 4th through 12th grade called North Country School near Lake Placid, New York. They also grew their own vegetables as a summer camp, Camp Treetops in the summer. And the camp would kind of tend the vegetables, and then we would harvest them, and it was a beautiful cycle, lots of animals to care for. And so the combination of my mother's passion and then the early imprinting of my involvement as part of a school community, no doubt made a big impact on my desire to have an organic farm.
Eileen, I am very involved in a division of a nearby college, which we refer to as Change. And
refer to as what?
Change, C-H, it's Change with an extra H in it. And I haven't spoken about it much on Preferred Company, but I am going to introduce it now for a specific reason. What we work on is to make sure that our children in New Jersey learn racial tolerance. We are trying to instill in children the anti-bullying mentality, which when you and I grew up did not exist. The schoolyard was actually frightening. Tolerance of gays, to wipe out genocide in this world. And my feeling is, even though you were so protected by all of this wealth, and tell me if I'm right, that your parents actually understood racial tolerance then, long before it was in vogue.
Right. Well, they absolutely did. And when I was, I must have been about 12, my sister had worked in Harlem. She was in her teens, and she asked my father if she befriended several girls who were living there, African Americans, and asked my father and mother if she could invite them up to Maine. And we had the most glorious time. Actually, one of their names was Gloria. And we all built a raft together. Well, my brother and sister and Gloria and I did. And we had such a wonderful time. I only wished that I had had more of a chance to learn from her.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that one of the very surprising and inspiring outgrowths of my book have been the letters I've received specifically from African-American women. I just received one last week from a woman in Indiana who's about my age and said she was in the library, saw the title of my book, Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself, and at first she just passed it by because she thought, well, what could a Rockefeller have to say to me? I mean, I grew up in poverty. I've made my way, but after the recession, I've been struggling, so what could she do? But then she liked the piece, the last part of the title, which is Becoming Myself, which, after all, is everyone's task, no matter what family we come from. That's the universal. So it drew her in, and she said that the fact that she could find these universal connections, despite her background being so different from mine, that it was a leveling. It helped her feel somehow courage to move forward, that we could all be on the same plane. And that has just made me so happy.
Indeed. Eileen, before I give you a very big thank you for being here today, it's so important to me that you give out all of your contact information, the book, your website. We do have time for that before I go to break. So let's do that.
Well, thank you. I hope that my listeners out there would be interested to read my book. I love hearing from people. So please look for me at EileenRockefeller.com. That's my website. There's a place to contact me. I have a weekly blog. A post comes up every Tuesday. And the most recent one is about heart talks that we used with our sons, and which are great tools for mothers and fathers to use with their children. And the name of my book, which you can order online or in your local store, is Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself by me, Eileen Rockefeller. It's been such a pleasure to be with you today, Joel and Marianne.
Well,
thank you so much.
I have to tell you that it has been more of a pleasure for us having you as a guest today. Truly, truly an honor. Do come down to Ocean County. I will give you a personal tour of the great park that your great-grandfather donated
That's
here.
That's so nice.
All right.
Well, thank you. That's a lovely offer. You have a great day, and happy Mother's Day to everyone out there.
And to you as well. Eileen, thank you once again. Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Now back to Preferred Company with Joel Markell and Marianne Levy on WOBMAM 1160 and 1310.
What a genuine, nice, soft-spoken person, lady. I use the word lady. You can't use that word very often, you know, but definite lady.
She was definitely a lady. It comes across in her book, which I'm going to give to you, and I am done with it.
Okay.
I find it intriguing, I will say, to be born in that kind of wealth, I mean, never to really have to worry about money.
Or anything.
Right.
Yeah, you just...
No, I can't. That I'm not going to say.
All right, no, there are things to worry about, but...
Plenty of things to worry about once money is out of the way.
Okay.
Okay, we are all God's children. Anything can happen to us.
True.
At any single day.
You're right, you're right.
So, we are all filled with worry and doubt, okay? I once read something that I really love for... Since death was invented, no man could be totally secure with his life.
Wow, that's pretty deep.
Profound, right?
Yes.
And it's so true.
Yep.
I mean, we all live day to day. We have to. I was thinking about this all day yesterday from a conversation that you and I had that, you know, every time I get into bed, I thank God that my loved ones, you know, have had a safe day, that we're all together. And every time I wake up, I ask God for a safe day. And to bless my family.
That's
and,
you very know, nice.
Whether you are a Markel, a Levy, or a Rockefeller, you have to do the same thing because one never knows from minute to minute. But yes, she was such a nice lady. I think she's devoting, at a pretty young age, Marianne, devoting herself to being an organic farmer. You know, a lot of people could have taken themselves and done something entirely different, but she's devoting her life to something really, really good. You'll see that in the book when you read it.
All right. Now, let's pick up where we left off before I leave. You're telling us about Jason Alexander. Well, you did tell me off the air that...
I will tell you. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell... yes, we did, and I don't like when we leave conversations unfinished. Exactly. So I appreciate you bringing it up, Mia. I went to see the show Big. Now, it was a movie. The movie was much more famous than the show was. In fact, the show was a financial failure, a dismal failure, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I took my family a second time and got very good seats. It was the last day of the show. And all of the
was it on Broadway, off Broadway?
On.
Okay.
Very much on Broadway. I'll have to Google it to see when it was. But
I can do that while you're talking.
The long and short of it was all the producers were in the audience to bid the play farewell. And Jason Alexander was sitting very close to me. I had my son Jimmy, who was just probably around 10 years old then, if I had to take a guess, with me. And I asked Jason Alexander for an autograph.
1996, yes.
All right, so Jimmy was exactly 10 years old. I hit it on the button. Wow.
Okay.
And I went over and I asked Jason Alexander if I could have his autograph. Obviously, Jimmy being starstruck by somebody from Seinfeld. And he said to me, he wasn't fresh, Marianne. He wasn't
rude,
but... It's embarrassing when you go up to somebody like that and they refuse you.
Right.
He said to me, I don't give out autographs when my children are with me. And I had to say to my son that he turned us down and, you know, I wasn't able to get it. But I kind of forgive him because I just wonder, even if at his level of fame, and you and I, again, we're talking about this during the break, whether at his level of fame, he puts his children at danger by just being around.
Sure, if he was distracted and starting to sign autographs, somebody could come around, and you said the children were young.
They were.
Okay. Well, now that's different than the incident I had with Howie Mandel. I loved Howie Mandel, especially when he played little Bobby, Bobby's World, you know, Howie's World, you know, the whole bit. I loved Howie Mandel. And this was back when we first started Bob and Marianne in the Morning. We were still in Hal. And little boss, Stu Greenblatt, who was our, you know, our guy at the time, he would try his hardest to find these celebrities for me to talk to. And he knew I loved Howie Mandel. Well, he finally got a hold of Howie Mandel, and he told me I was going to have him on. Just on the air, you know, on the phone. And I got so excited. I mean, I was just bubbling. Well, he came in to me. He said, Howie had to cancel. I'm sorry. I said, oh, God. The next day, after the show was over at 10 o'clock, he goes, Howie's on the phone. I said, who? He goes, Howie. I said, are you kidding me? And this was off the air already. So I get on the phone, and I'm saying, hi, is this Howie Mandel? He goes, yeah. And I said, oh, my God, you're not going to believe this. And I went on to tell him how excited I was, how disappointed I was. I said how much I loved him, his work. But his response to me was, can we get on with this? I got things to do. And I was like, oh, okay. Totally, like, took a pin and hit my balloon and just a
Well, that's not your style.
No.
You don't hang out with people like that.
No. So Erica and I were going to see him. He was going to play at the Count Basie in Red Bank, okay? We had tickets, front row tickets. We're going to go see him. We're going to go backstage the whole bit. Well, Erica and I went to go see him. We left halfway through because of just the way he treated me. I said to Air, I don't find him amusing anymore. I know what he's really like, and he really kind of hurt my feelings by doing that. And not personally hurting my feelings because he doesn't know who I am, but just being so rude, he wasn't the nice person that I thought he was.
Which is always disappointing, but I will tell you that you may...
See, it's the truth.
Yes.
I've sneezed.
That's
Thank
right.
you.
These people are human beings too.
Yes.
And they have moods, and I'm not saying that he was right, and believe me, my ego would have been... hurt as well, because it's very hard to look at it as from their point of view, which is I am.
But there could have been a nicer way to say it. Can we please get on with this? I got things to do.
Well, let's just say I love the people in this building. You know that.
Yeah.
All right. You can't ask for a better bunch. But everything that's ever said to me, or everything that I ever say to anybody in the hall, the best thing that could have left my lips. Sometimes I'm like.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've got other things on my mind.
I know.
So,
but still.
You know what? If he knew you, he would love you.
No, he's weird. Okay. Joel, guess what? That's it.
It's it for today. Say goodbye.
Yes.
But you and I are going to be together tomorrow on Friday, Mia.
What time you come back? In? 8?
8-ish? At 8.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Good.
All right. If you meet a nurse or a home health aide today, please say thank you from Joel. I preferred.
Thank you for listening to Preferred Company, giving you information on the world of home health care. Be sure to listen every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WOVM AM 1160 and 1310.
I preferred home health care. You're in Preferred Company.
The proceeding was a paid program. The purpose of the program is to provide information only. Nothing on this program was designed to be a recommendation.